Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, and today we're talking about if anyone can stop the Denver Nuggets. So we're getting pretty close to the playoffs, right? We're after the All-Star break. We're in the closing stretch here. This is where if you're a playoff contending team, especially near like the top of the standings, you know, just trying to get everything optimized, trying to ramp up your team, trying to, you know, win a couple pivotal games here and there just to keep the confidence high, and you're just gearing up for the postseason. Obviously, the Nuggets win the championship last year. Jokic is in the middle of the MVP race, so there's a lot of storylines going on, a lot happening. But I have noticed I've been spending a lot of time thinking about the league, obviously, and the playoffs coming up. And the question I just keep asking myself is, I'm pretty sure the Nuggets are going to repeat. I'm feeling pretty good about that. And you know, the logical question you know after you have that thought is, okay, well, what if I'm wrong, right? Like, what would it take for the Nuggets to not repeat? Like, where is the possible chink in the armor? Is there a bad matchup come playoff time? And it's kind of hard to individually go through, like, every single team, because, like, the seeding is going to decide some of that, and that's going to be kind of blurry as we get towards the end of the year. But I don't know, I just keep finding myself thinking about this team where, man, the Laker game the other night, it was tough because it felt exactly like the Western Conference Finals last year, where I feel like the Lakers were playing pretty well. They, you know, experienced team. They understood it's a big game. You know, they're in it. They're locked in. But just the resiliency of the Nuggets offense specifically is so difficult to handle for a team because, like, you know, somebody put this together on Twitter, and it was a montage of Jamal Murray pick and roll to Jokic. So that already stresses your defense enough because Jamal Murray, unbelievable pull-up shooter, especially from the three-point. Like, I think he's over 40% this year on pull-up threes. So he's a really dangerous scorer in himself. He can score at all three levels pretty effectively. He's a good athlete. If you do not direct defensive attention towards him, he's going to toast you. And then when he gets hot, if he can get hot, you're in a lot of trouble. Because once Jamal Murray gets like Super Saiyan 3 hot, there's nothing really you can do. And then you're trying to pick your poison between him and Jokic, and you're it's pretty much over at that point. There's not a lot of games that the Nuggets lose where Jamal Murray is playing at a super high level. Because, like, I talk about this, there's certain characteristics of, like, teams that are playing at a high level when everything falls into place. Sometimes there's really just nothing you can do. It's part of the reason they play a seven-game series. And, like, a couple years ago when the Lakers were a better team, you know, 2020, 2021, if Anthony Davis hit 2 3-pointers in a game, it didn't happen very often, but, like, you're just going to lose. Like, if everything's going that well for the Lakers and his confidence is that high and he hits two of them, like, you're just not going to win that night. And maybe you get him back, you know, the next night or in game three or whatever it may be. But there's just certain things where when a team is rolling and everything's going right for them and they're super talented, there's points where they're just undeniable. So you have the beginning of the pick and roll with Jamal Murray, where you kind of have to, you got to keep him tamped down, right? Obviously, he's going to pass to Jokic, and then on top of Jokic's, well, what I actually think is probably the greatest, one of the greatest offensive weapons I've ever seen, which is Jokic's floater. Because in the past, you know, we've seen, okay, what you don't want to do is you don't want to give up a ton of rim attempts, and you don't want to give up a ton of three-point shots. And if you can force mid-rangers, specifically in the key, if you can get like a lot of like weird in-between 5-6-foot shots, like, you're going to have a difficult time converting those over and over again. If you're not in rhythm, or, you know, you get some contests on that on top of it being, you know, not the most efficient shot on the court. So traditionally, you know, in this new era of basketball, if you can have people taking sort of awkward in-between shots, that you're pretty happy with that as a defense. But in the pick and roll, Jokic's ability to hit that little 4-foot, 5-foot floater over and over and over again is one of the more devastating shots I've seen ever. Because one, he's so big, right? Like 7-foot long wingspan, where he's releasing it, you're never going to block it. That it's a floater, he's like conceding, like, okay, this might be a little difficult at the rim. If I get stuck at the rim flat-footed, There's lots of defenders around me. You could potentially get into trouble. I know he has a lot of moves, a lot of fakes to get people when they are in good position out of it, but he can just circumvent all that by just taking a floater where, you know, pick and roll, if two go to Murray, they, you know, bounce past to Jokic, he's rolling to the basket. He can just, there's nothing you can do. You can't get over there quick enough. You can't, it's very difficult to take away 7-footers floaters. So that is one of the best shots. I think when he goes down in history, he gets retired, wherever we talk about him all time, I think like that signature floater, like to the point where like the statue he gets in Denver could be him shooting a floater. That's how good his floater is. It's probably the greatest floater ever. He doesn't shoot it at the same volume as other players, but just in terms of shot making, it feels as automatic as really any shot in the game. So you have the Jamal Murray part of the equation, the pull-up shooting, the explosiveness, the, you know, scoring in bunches. You have the roll man in Jokic, his unbelievable floater, you know, has a bevy of other moves. On top of that, he can see the entire court and he can make any pass. And on top of that, this is where I was getting, I lost track here. The montage that I saw that someone threw was the fluidity that it goes Jamal Murray to Jokic on the roll to then the lob to Aaron Gordon, cutting from the corner, finding the soft spot among the baseline. Aaron Gordon's chemistry with Nikola Jokic is one of the best two-player, just like quick flash look at each other. Sometimes they don't even look at each other. Their ability to feel each other's game out, specifically on lobs, in pick and rolls, or where the ball is ping-ponging around, where it's not a set, because we see this with other, you know, other players, where you know everything slows down to almost a near stop. There's a lot of dribbling at the perimeter. And then, you know, once you execute, once everything kind of goes, then something happens really quickly. And it's like, oh, it just was a step too fast. With this, there's a rhythm to it. There's an understanding of Aaron Gordon of when to cut, how to time that up, how to play with Jokic. And obviously, Jokic is one of the greatest passers, if not the greatest passer ever. So, you know, a lot of credit goes to him. But really smart cutters, that's a hard thing to, even in the data, that can be a hard thing to quantify. I did look into it. Aaron Gordon, pretty good volume on cuts, and the efficiency throughout his career, but specifically over the last 2 years, has been right at the very tippy top of the league. And once you start filtering towards players that actually do it a lot, he's pretty much right there at the top. So he's a great blend of size, speed, athleticism, timing, and feel, where he has really all the components. Because the really difficult thing is when you have forwards that are as big as him cutting, it's really difficult to rotate over and contest those shots because they're already just so big. And then on top of that, Aaron Gordon's such a nasty athlete. So you have the Jamal Murray part of the equation, you have the Jokic part of the equation, and then you have the Aaron Gordon barreling down. They almost get rim pressure in a different way. And they're like the gravity, we're so used to seeing like Steph Curry's gravity, where there's like a warping effect of wherever he's going, and the team trying to send one, two, or like just as their team defense try to take him away. We've seen gravity with Dame, where he's just pulling everything so far away from the basket that it stretches your defense basically vertically, almost in the way that like a speed threat like Tyreek Hill stretches your defense vertically in football. When you have Jokic on the short roll and you have Gordon cutting behind the defense to the basket, it causes like a weird hesitancy and a sort of freezing by the defense because you're worried about so many things that you're almost sometimes taking away none of them. And sometimes you feel powerless to take away any of it. Because pull-up three-point shooting is a difficult thing to take away without completely selling out with the big and the small and the pick-and-roll defense, right? And then you're giving up 3-on-4 to the short roll. And you can do that. But when you do commit to, I guess that's the easiest of this equation. When you do that, it is, you're already putting your defense in so much of a stressful situation where you're already starting the rotations behind it. Okay, so now you have a 3-on-4 on the backside, and you're like, well, I hope this big can't thread the needle over and over again or find the open man or whatever it may be. Now, when it's the best passer in the league, that's really going to be a problem. Who also has the best floater in the league? This is a unique problem. On top of that, you have Aaron Gordon, who is one of the top cutters in the league. And you start to see where all of these skill sets together start to synergize to like a lethality or a knife's edge, where if you're helping from the corner to try to stop the Jokic roll and you have Aaron Gordon behind you moving and he's already caught a lob or two and you've already been a step or two late on the other possessions on Jokic getting to the basket or getting to his shot, all of a sudden, when you start getting pulled apart in different directions, it becomes really uncomfortable and it becomes very difficult mentally. So you have those three problems. And then on top of that, let's just say you're going to condense everything down to the basket of, we need to sell out on the Jokic roll, but we also understand the lob threat that is Aaron Gordon. And, you know, he's not a huge spacing threat. Occasionally will knock a shot down from the perimeter, but much better around the basket. So it's like, okay, we're really going to pack everything in. As a defense, we got to commit to that. It's a five-man game, right? So the next part of that equation is Michael Porter Jr., who, for my money on any given night, is the best spot-up option in the league. Like, just straight up in terms of just one, being able to knock down three after three after three, because he's one of the premier sharpshooters in the league. At his size, at 6'10", contesting that shot is very difficult, even when you are in pretty good position, because you're just going to need to have some physical tools to do that. Very difficult. And then on top of that, his ability to attack closeouts, you know, he doesn't have the most wiggle in his game, but again, at that size, finishing at the rim against lighter contests or against a rotating guard, it's kind of game over, again, because you're 5 inches taller than the guy rotating over. So you have Jamal Murray to Jokic to then the potential of the Gordon cut to the basket, the Michael Porter Jr. spot up. And then on the other side of that, when they really, you know, locked in their top lineup, you have the KCP spot up, who's been one of the better 3-and-D players in the league over the last number of years. So you have two extremely good 3-point shooting options in Michael Porter Jr. and KCP. You have Aaron Gordon lurking as sort of the movement threat, because you do run into problems. We've seen this before, like spread pick and roll. You're trying to get the ball to the corners for 3-point attempts or the wings or things like that. But when you have, we've talked about this, rigidity in your offense. So let's just say, hypothetically, you have a star player who's amazing, who can do everything at a very high level. And then you have four, like 3-and-D options where their job, like they're Royce O'Neal. Like they're a good player, but their job is to stand there in space. Sometimes you have an issue where, because not enough moving parts are happening, it's easier for the defense to key in on things and even understand, okay, once we force the ball out of the star player's hands, we know the ball's going to the corner. We're going to rotate down from the wing. Like, you can not only have your first rotation kind of ready to go, but you can have your second and third rotations happening a split second quicker because, again, nothing is moving. It's almost, the lack of complication makes playing defense easier is really what it is. So the wild card of Aaron Gordon in all of this and his rim finishing is really, really important. It doesn't always have to be a dunk, right? Sometimes it's a layup. Sometimes it's actually him then moving the ball. He's actually a pretty underrated passer, never a high volume guy, but has always been a really good efficiency, just moving the ball, keeping it going, not turning it over. And it's had some pretty good quality years as well. So on top of everything that we've kind of been building on in this episode, you have the spacing options. Again, Michael Porter Jr., where him taking just a 3-point shot feels really good for the offense. That's like another thing that kind of comes into play. You know, we've all seen players like, trying to think of the stereotype, you know, like 36-37% 3-point shooters, they're around league average, where like there's viability to their shots. Like Patrick Beverley comes to mind, where like if he's shooting 3-pointers, it's like, if you're the, like, let's say you're rooting for the other team, right? You're like, okay, like I don't want to be giving up a ton of open 3-point shots, but he's not going to hit all of them. He's going to hit a few of them. Historically, over his career, like the 3-point percentages, they're okay. They're good in certain years. It tailed off the last few. And, you know, the shot quality has always been really high. But there are just certain players where you feel different levels about their shot that they're getting, right? And whenever Michael Porter Jr. is putting up a three, whenever I'm watching a Denver game, I'm like, this is a good possession. This is really good. Even when it's fairly contested, again, because of the height and the extreme skill, where I'm like, oh, it's like, if I always think of, I don't know why, Cam Johnson, whenever I think of Michael Porter Jr., of like tall wings that take a lot of threes. And whenever the possession like ping pongs around and ends with them taking a shot, I'm always like, yeah, that was a good possession for the offense. I feel good about that one. So you have the ability to pull a defense apart at five positions when Denver is running their top lineup out there. And that is just really, really difficult. I don't know. Maybe like the Timberwolves with their unbelievable defense can slow it down. But really elite units, it's hard to suppress them. It's just really hard to suppress them. So that's kind of what I've been thinking about for the last, I don't know, I'd say week or two. Other guys on the roster, Christian Braun, we saw last year, give him some good minutes. He's a good athlete. He's got pretty decent size. He isn't particularly great at anything, but it is nice to have an athlete in there that like occasionally will put together some nice possessions, more on defense, but occasionally on offense will make some things happen. Reggie Jackson, he's a player I've always kind of liked as a backup guard, and he's had a pretty good season in Denver this year. And then Peyton Watson, second-year man, has put up some pretty strong D-LeBron numbers throughout this season. As a wing stopper, that's sustained pretty well. So there are a few options on the bench, and that you have like basically two more like wingish players in Christian Braun and Peyton Watson that – or Christian Brown, I guess. This is the problem with doing broadcasting, with doing podcasting, radio, whatever it may be. I wish everyone just spelled their name how you say it, because it's like clearly spelled Braun, and that's what I thought it was for a long time. And now everyone's like, nah, it's Brown. And it's like, I wish everything was spelled phonetically. But they have two younger, more defensive-oriented guys on the bench that they can go to in the playoffs. So again, that question of who is going to stop Denver. I'm interested to see. I know the Clippers were really hot for a while. They've cooled down now. I'm interested to see that matchup of Kawhi and Harden and PG. But I don't know. I don't know if it's because of injuries. But or I don't know. Ty Lue's like to do this. He's just gone small a lot, where he's had kind of basically Kawhi at the five. And that's, I don't think, is going to work against the Nuggets. I think you'd have a lot of trouble trying to go smaller against this team, because it just doesn't have the classic problems that big teams have. We're like Jokic, yeah, he's a center, he's a big guy, but he really likes to be super active out on the perimeter and try to rack up a lot of deflections, where like he's not afraid to leave the paint. Sometimes when you play a team where that big really doesn't want to leave the restricted area, I'm not saying it's always effective, but at least the strategy is clear, where it's like, we're really trying to pull this guy out, and if not, we're really going to punish him. So that'll be interesting. I'd be hesitant to see that strategy work, or attempt that strategy, but who knows? Who knows what the Clippers try to do? Like I said, the Timberwolves, really historically good defense. I don't think they ultimately have the offensive firepower to... I'm actually worried about them, like maybe like first-round exit. Really, really good year. Really great year for their franchise. But when the offense is as bad as it is and can stall, and maybe Ant struggles in a game or two, they potentially could have a quick exit from the playoffs. So, you know, you never know there. But OKC, really, really young. I feel like their loss to the Lakers last night was sort of a, you know, you don't want to take too many things away from it, but you know, when the classic veteran team gets up playing the young team that's been on a roll this year, and they beat them pretty handily, you're like, oh, is there something we got to be a little worried about here? I'm not really sure. So I don't know. We'll see. And then it really looks like, you know, you'd think like, oh, who's a dark horse team? You know, can Golden State or can the Lakers make a run from the bottom of the bracket? And it's like, I don't think the Lakers can beat Denver. I think it's been very clear over the last year and a half that they cannot. And Golden State, I don't know, maybe Golden State could, you know, cook something up that challenges this team. I don't think they have enough talent overall on their roster to really be too dangerous. So I see Denver coming out of the West and going for their second championship in a row. Who knows? This could be a three-peat in the making. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to get that out there. This is what I've been kind of chewing on. This episode, obviously, a little bit different. Because sometimes, like, the episodes are really, really stat heavy. And, you know, it's fine, obviously, her basketball index. And there was a lot of research done prior. Like, so I've been thinking about all these things. So what I did is, instead of presenting all the stats to you, I just looked them all up, did all the research, and then tried to basically almost, like, to make it easier to consume. Because I know sometimes it's hard when you list a lot of numbers and a lot of names. Basically, just like juiced. Like, imagine if all the stats are oranges. I just juiced them all and tried to make them into a really consumable, drinkable thing here in a 20-minute episode. And just kind of condense all those stats and what I'm seeing into just more free-flowing opinions. But I don't know. Let me know on Twitter, at TaylorMetrics. And that kind of wraps up my my ramblings on is there any way that the Nuggets lose? Is there any team that can stop the Nuggets this year in the playoffs? Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll see you on the next one for the Basketball Index Podcast.